Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Consideration. Hillary is in trouble over Libya. Rand Paul signs a letter to Iran. Iraq joins with Iran to oust ISIS. And Congress attempts to exert its power. What's going on? Let's talk. This is J.C. Henry, and you're listening to Considerations. Today we're going to be looking at, first we're going to be looking at Rand Paul, and then we'll look at Hillary. We've had a lot of coverage on Hillary lately. And thirdly, on Iraq in this half-hour program. The two things that go together here are Rand Paul, who signs a letter to Iran with other senators, and Congress attempting to assert its power. And the Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, who may be announcing any day now that he's going to be a presidential candidate and run for at least acceptance of his party and then try to win the general election. Senator Paul signed a letter to Iran, and in his statements about that, he says that he's against war and in favor of negotiations, but he's also in favor of congressional power. And as I listen to the Daily News, I find that Senator Paul's sophistication in world affairs is refreshing because it isn't as easy as everyone wants it to be. Now, Senator Paul has been called a dove, anti-war, and he is. He's against war. I think as any reasonable person should be. He is against war. I am against war, and I served in the United States military for 30 years. War is a failure of diplomacy. War is a failure of conversation. War is a failure of negotiation. And Senator Rand Paul, in his worldview, is in favor of diplomacy. We can get things done diplomacy-wise. We can talk to each other. We can communicate with each other. We can negotiate with each other to attain what is best for ourselves and others and for the world at large. And Senator Paul wants to be sure that we are clear about that and that we exhaust every single possibility for peace. That doesn't mean he believes in appeasement. He's not going to give away the farm, so to speak. He's not going to give in to tyrants and dictators, but he also realizes the limitations of American power. Senator Paul says we need to have boots on the ground sometime and somewhere, but not all times everywhere. That's a paraphrase of his phrase. I forget exactly how he put it, but I really appreciated that. Senator Paul, in one of the interviews he had on the national television networks, stated that he believes in the power of the United States militarily, but also morally and economically, and that the use of military power is the failure of the moral or the ethical, philosophical, or the commercial elements of American society to win the day. And he's quick to add that the reason why you have a military is to defend the nation from attack and to defend the interests of the nation worldwide. Now, that's not the interests of the corporations. It's not the interests of the economic factors. It's not the interests of the investors. It's not the interests of those who want to mine gold in Africa or get diamonds in South Africa or get oil out of the Pacific Rim. It's the interests of the United States of America as a nation. Sometimes our commercial interests coincide with our national interest, and in those cases, we have to use everything we can, especially moral power, leadership power, economic power, organizational power, negotiation power, and the like, to attain worldwide what is best for the nation, and not just boots on the ground. And so, Senator Paul is not what they call anti-war exclusively, but if he was to be a president, he has stated repeatedly that he will do everything he possibly can to both defend the nation and its interests, especially from attack by others, and defend the nation internationally. But war is always, always a last resort, and only to be entered into with regret. Now, Senator Paul also mentions in many of his interviews that he understands the use of the insertion of limited amounts of military force in order to defend the interests locally of the United States, but also from a humanitarian aspect. Senator Rand Paul is a physician. He's a doctor. He believes in the ethical imperative, which is to do no harm. The prime directive, as Spock would say in the famous sci-fi fiction of the United States, the prime directive is not to interfere with the indigenous populations, or in ethical terms, to do no harm, do no wrong, bring no disaster. Do not just strike out and destroy everything in the name of preserving the good, but try to prevent it as much best you can from ever happening. Senator Paul, if he was president, I'm sure would dedicate himself tirelessly to that. Senator Paul, by the way, gives eye operations for people, and he does that gratis every year. This is a man who lives by his words, and he doesn't just use them, he lives by them. Recently, Senator Paul, signing a letter to Iran, was criticized by many as being undermining the administration of the United States, and he stated in one of his Senate hearings that he was tired of hearing this administration lecture him about the Constitution and the powers of the Constitution, and he's absolutely right. The President of the United States, in this particular case, with broadcasting this in March 2015, has stated clearly that he will go around Congress. He doesn't have to bother with Congress. He will subvert the powers of Congress with his pen and his phone. He will do what he wants to do, whether Congress likes it or not. And actually, I just want to state that as a shame. I think that the administration of Barack Obama held so much promise, had so much opportunity. He entered into it with the goodwill of the nation. He had overwhelming support everywhere. He had a Democrat-controlled Senate, and Congress was under his control under Nancy Pelosi. He could have done so many good things. And, of course, we came up originally with the going into the Middle East and proclaiming the Arab Spring, which is something that I think historians and even today people should look at. What happened during that first 6 months of the presidency of Barack Obama, as he proclaimed and I think fostered and assisted in what he called the Arab Spring? I have quite a few programs on that in terms of the invasion of a sovereign nation, namely Libya, and the destruction of the government of Libya by the force of the United States and NATO power. Unbridled, unmitigated, and unexcusable aggression. The United States entered into an attack against the sovereign state and crossed its borders, bombed its cities, destroyed its military, overturned its government, and executed its leader. And that was done under the Barack Obama administration. It was an invasion not approved by anybody. It was something that NATO, as a regional military power, so the United States, along with Cameron, England, and Sarkozy, France, decided to go after. By the way, I think he was the second richest man in the world. The second richest man in the world. I think he was worth $200 and $300 billion. Go after him and destroy him because we believe that that was the right thing to do. Subsequently, after that, we also, or simultaneously, we attacked the Mubarak regime and decided on regime change in Egypt. We had some little piece to do in Tunisia, and then we set our sights on turning of the established political order in northern Africa has led us today to ISIS. Rand Paul is against ISIS. He wants ISIS to be stopped. He recognizes it as a barbaric power as it is. However, Senator Paul recognizes that this is a bigger problem. Recently, a Brett Baer of Fox News had on the president of al-Sisi of Egypt, and he spoke at great length as to the regional nature, the complicated nature, and the intertwined religious, social, political, economic factors that played a part in what's going on in northern Africa today. And although President al-Sisi did not talk about his own coup d'etat and then eventual election, he obviously is a corrective to the excesses that the American interventionist policy of President Barack Obama produced in the most important regional country, Egypt. And al-Sisi said that, you know, these things cannot be solved by outsiders. And Rand Paul would agree to that. He says, yes, we need to have boots on the ground. And I would think about 2 months ago, Senator Rand Paul talked about Arab boots on the ground. He's talking about Egypt, Saudi Arabia, a very powerful nation that doesn't seem to do anything to prevent the countries of Iraq and other Arab nations. Now, when we say about boots on the ground, Arab boots on the ground, there's a couple of factors, culturally, religiously, ethnically, in terms of history, in terms of shared cultures, regional cultures, and language, a very, very important part of this Arab Brotherhood coalition, which, unlike the Arab Brotherhood that wants to destroy us, should be an Arab Brotherhood, a coalition of powers to destroy ISIS terrorists. Very interesting interview by Greg Baer. So, back to Rand Paul. Rand Paul signs a letter to Iran. It's a letter. Senators can do what they want. They can sign letters to anyone they want. There's nothing in the law that says they can't. And there's nothing in the letter that hurts the president other than a reminder to the president and to the leadership in Iran that the Congress of the United States of America has the power to accept or reject treaties, and that its laws and congressional laws and its sanctions cannot be undone by executive power. Again, we run into this problem with the president of the United States, who believes that if he doesn't agree with the Congress, he can just do away with what the Congress does, in effect, legislating. The government of the United States does not give the president the power to legislate. He can propose legislation. He can suggest legislation. He can lay out legislation. He can tell the Congress his vision, his strategy, his direction for the government, and he can have his minions, his Democrat minions in the Congress, craft the bones and structure and muscles and sinews of legislation and present it to the Congress for discussion and debate, and then he can have that passed or not passed, and if it's and amended or changed, or, and then the Congress decides. So the president proposes used to be the phrase, but the Congress disposes. And this president doesn't believe in that. He doesn't believe in that. He believes in executive legislation. He believes the executive power is supreme. He believes that the president can do whatever he wants. And the checks and balance system of the United States Congress and the executive and the judicial branch is not meaningful if it goes against what he wants. He will use the Congress, and he will use the judicial, and he will use the powers of the presidency for his own purposes. But when he's told that the Congress, which is 435 Congress people and 100 senators representing millions and millions of Americans, when they say no, he says, I don't care what you say, I'm going to do what I want. That's a real big problem for him. We're having that debate now. Senator Paul is leading that debate about the powers of Congress and the separation of powers between the executive that carries out the law, which President Obama has repeatedly refused to do in the area of immigration and in several other areas. He refused. I'm not going to do that. I'm not carrying out the law. So he has some precedent in Andrew Jackson, who also was a lawless president. But for a president who came in with such promise, it's a shame. It really is sad to see such and the medication gets put down in frame by its own decision. Now, recently, we have evidence of that in former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the president of the President Clinton, his wife Hillary, who became a senator and within Congress for 2 days, and then became Secretary of State without any experience in foreign affairs. He broke the law by having private, we all know about that, private emails and all. But why would she want to be so private and so secretive? And the key issue here is several key issues for Hillary. Number one, she shouldn't have done what she knew. She knew it was wrong to do it. She told everyone else in the State Department not to do it. But she and her associates did it, and she knew they were doing it, and they did it because they felt like doing it, because they were above the law and outside the law, and they didn't have to pay attention to the law, but everybody else did. That is a syndrome. That is a personal value system. That is a reflection of her core values. Whereas Dr. Paul, Senator Paul, who's a physician, his core value is the prime directive or the ethical imperative, which is do no harm, do the good. Hillary Clinton has revealed herself as a person who said law, ethics, morality, rightness and wrongness do not apply to me. And they apply to everybody else. And they don't apply to my people. They apply to everybody else's people. So I don't have to do that. That's an ethical and moral fault. And I don't know if you can take that out of the person. Hillary also was very much involved, and we haven't even begun to look at that, in Libya with the shipment of weapons and other kinds of ammunition through Libya, through Benghazi. She was very much involved in the Benghazi event, including the death of our ambassador there, as she was the Secretary of State at the time. And everything that connects her in any way, and there have to be emails and messages and all kinds of things, to Libya and Benghazi have disappeared. Well, that's because she owned public government email in her private account, and she destroyed them. That's the accusation, and this American believes the accusation to be worthy of being charged. But she deserves to be charged with that. And personally, I think if it's possible to have her arrested, I think she should be arrested. At the minimum, a subpoena should be issued in, and they already have for the protection of this information, but the subpoena should be issued immediately for the seizure of the stormbearer to hand over what belongs to the government as according to the law. So she doesn't do that. A lot of people are in her court because I think a Hillary person is always going to be a Hillary person. There's nothing, it's like a Barack Obama person. Believe me, I honestly can tell you that I would like to have seen that Barack Obama administration do that, and there was a lot of hope for that administration, but it failed. And it failed from the beginning with the Arab Spring. It failed with Obamacare. You would not listen to Congress. You would not negotiate with Congress. You didn't test it. The administration always gave custody. Now, I don't know about you, but I had a daddy and a mommy, but my daddy used to say all the time, a person, and what he meant by that, he would explain to me oftentimes, is that a person who is trustworthy will act in such a way, speak in such a way, and live in such a way that you never have to be told to trust that person. You will trust that person because you know from experience, acting and interacting with that person is trustworthy. I'm sure that if you've lived any kind of life, you've met people who you trusted implicitly and explicitly, and people you wouldn't have trusted or doubted from the very get-go, or people you met who you weren't sure about, but eventually you turned into a trustor or distrustor of that person. Mrs. Clinton has shown herself to be untrustworthy in several ways, lying and breaking the rules and applying the rules to other people, et cetera, et cetera. We feel that their news commission just said, well, I'm not conflicted. I don't feel like it. It's fantastic. When she said it before the Congress of Benghazi, and what difference does it make if people die and that the American government, which could have saved them, didn't save them? What difference does it make? They get that kind of attitude is not worthy of a potential president of the United States. Now, going back to Rand Paul for a minute, been talking to the defense secretary, I think it was in the March time frame, year 2015, powers of the Congress, and his feeling that the Congress has authority over various forms of government-to-government agreement. And this is true. Now, Tom Cotton, Senator Tom Cotton, explained to Greta Van Susteren that a government has many forms of agreement, and government-to-government agreements are all subjected to congressional approval, however, or should be. However, the approval is different levels of, I don't have that in front of me, I think Senator Cotton mentioned that the government-to-government agreements require only 51 Senate approval, but a treaty requires two-thirds of the Senate to agree, so 67 senators would have to agree to a treaty. Now, when the President of the United States is having negotiations, and these are long negotiations, with the government of one of the biggest terrorists in the world, legitimate government, we should hold conversations with them, Senator Corbett. We should negotiate with them, Senator Corbett. We should have strong diplomatic relations with them, Senator Corbett. We should keep open all lines of cooperation, collaboration, and communication, Senator Corbett. But we shouldn't have a treaty that is not approved by the Senate of the United States of America. That's just the law. That's the way the Constitution is written. And what Senator Paul is spearheading and leading, and he is the leader, no matter who else speaks up, Senator Paul is the leader of a movement from the day he became a senator to exert the power of the Congress and mend it. And he's a man, a doctor. So you have to understand the ethical background, the value system of a doctor. He is wed completely to the ethical imperative, to the moral imperative, do no harm, do the good. And a doctor just can't go in and when he knows the right way to do a surgery and just do surgery any old way, willy-nilly, the way he feels like doing it today or tomorrow. A doctor can't go in and use dirty instruments. A doctor can't go in to operate and not glove himself. The doctor can't refuse to wash his hands because he doesn't believe in washing his hands. He knows what the rules are, and those rules are carried out exactly by the way procedures and approved ways of doing things. He will be liable. He will be liable. He will be held accountable. That's why doctors have so much, they have to take so much money for their malpractice. See, Dr. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, understands malpractice. If he does the wrong thing as a doctor and is shown to harm the patient and he did it with intention, then he's liable to be personally accountable for that wrong behavior. So using Hillary Clinton or President Barack Obama, they know what the rules are, but they break them. They know what the procedures are, but they decide not to abide by them. They know what they're supposed to do, and they don't do it. Now, if a doctor does that, he gets sued, and he has to pay out big money because he's held liable, because it's taken for granted as part of the profession of doctoring, but he will wash his hands, he will use instruments, he will carry out surgical procedures in the right way, and he will do everything possible to bring good to the patient. If he doesn't, it will be asked, what did he do? Why did he do it? And did he know the consequences of doing what he did? In his case, Senator Paul is applying the same standards that apply to a medical doctor. He's a black doctor, the president, this is a form of fair thing. And we should, as a nation, do the same. Hillary Clinton is not above the law, she's not outside the law, she's not immune from the law. She can't be the arbiter of the law. She's not a doctor. Nor is Barack Obama. So Rand Paul and the Congress are attempting to assert their power not to dominate the Congress over the presidency, but to reestablish the relationship and the executive, the president, a relationship that has been brutally hit by the Democrat Party. You had the last Congress, and the many Congresses, the six Congresses or so, during the first 6 years of the presidency of the Democrat president, Barack Obama, and his henchman in the Senate, Dirty Harry, what was his name? Harry Reid, who blocked discussion. He blocked consideration. It wasn't that the Congress didn't do its job. It's that Harry Reid, by some wild way that the Congress works, was given authority to block discussion on meaningful legislation. So for 6 years, under the direction of President Barack Obama, his man in the Senate refused to allow senators to do their job. He blocked the senators from carrying out their elected mandate through the work of the Congress. And the senators, much to my chagrin, being majority Democrats, accepted that. They didn't override the leader. And Harry Reid, being the senator, didn't oppose the presidency. And it's much to my sorrow that in the present situation, after the Republicans gained control of the House and the Senate, we didn't get enough senators to carry out the needed legislation because it was not believed by the American people that the Democrat Party would continue to stop legislation, continue as vote after vote after vote, where all the Democrats vote no. Even if they think or say privately that they would vote for it, they think that the president says vote against it, or Harry Reid says vote against it, or the Democratic Party thinks it. So we have these Democrat senators who don't think that they should do the right thing. They should just obey the party. It's similar to use the doctor's example, say that the Democrat process told all the senators to do something wrong. And they said, well, we know it's wrong, but the Democrat Party told us to do it, and we're going to do it. And that's it. The only way it can be corrected is to write them, call them, phone them, and select them when the time comes. So Hillary's trouble over Libya and her email, Rand Paul, attempting to defend the congressional authority and power as we put balance of constitutional power. Iraq joining with Iran to oust ISIS isn't something we were able to talk about only in the sense of Arab boots on the ground, although Iran is not an Arab country. Iran is the Kurdish, and I think even though a lot of people want to associate them as being Arabs and they wear similar clothing, all that kind of thing, have Islam as their religion, I think that Iran is not really an Arab. People to correct me about that, but look it up. Well, I want to thank you for listening. This has been a fast half hour. I'm J.C. Henry. You've been listening to Considerations, and let's talk again. Thank you very much for listening.